Peter's words of exhortation, which form our lesson text for tonight from 2 Peter chapter 1, verse 10, come at the conclusion of a very familiar list of things, a list of qualities for Christian living. The importance of that list Peter alludes to as he says, wherefore, brethren, give the more diligence to make your calling and election sure. Tonight, I want us to examine that phrase and look at a couple of questions that come to mind when we think about giving the more diligence to make our calling and election sure. I believe the phrase, give the more diligence, is very significant. I believe it sets the tone for what Peter says. I believe it places an emphasis on how important it is to make sure of our calling and our election. A quick comparison of several different translations on the rendering of give the more diligence, as the American Standard Version renders it, verse 10, I believe is very helpful. The New King James Version, very similar to the American Standard, be even more diligent. The New Century Version renders it very simply, try hard. The New Living Translation says, work hard. You get the message. Diligence means to bring in every possible effort. Tonight, I want us to look at that phrase, making our calling and election sure, with the understanding that it is something that we must be very diligent about. We must bring in every effort to the matter to make this calling and election sure. And a couple of questions I think need to be answered. Number one, why is this matter so important? Why is this something that Peter says that we should give the more diligence to? The wording that he uses, as I said a minute ago, emphasizes how important this matter is. Why is it so important? Number one, it is an important matter because salvation is so urgent. Our calling and our election, terms that stand for our salvation. We could in fact substitute the word salvation there for the phrase your calling and election. And so Peter is actually saying, give the more diligence to make your salvation sure, to make sure about your salvation, to make sure of your salvation, because salvation is something that is so urgent. I believe there had to be urgency in the voice of Peter in Acts chapter 2, verse 40, when he said, save yourselves from this crooked and untoward generation. In Philippians chapter 2 and verse 12, Paul's cry was, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. But you know, long before those words were even written, Jesus himself expressed an urgency concerning his mission, which was all about salvation, in John chapter 9 when he said, I must work the works of him that sent me while it is yet day, for the night cometh when no man can work. The writer of Hebrews, in Hebrews chapter 2, the first couple of verses, makes reference to so great a salvation. How could we conclude any other thing but that salvation is such an urgent matter? Secondly, we could fairly say that this is a very important consideration because to be lost would be truly horrible. Peter writes in 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 18, and if the righteous scarcely shall be saved, where shall the sinner and the ungodly appear? To contemplate the very idea of being lost First of all, just in the sense of being lost is humanly traumatic. Perhaps you've experienced the feeling of being lost to the point of fearing for your survival. Perhaps a few of us have felt that, and most of us probably have not. We've been lost in the parking lot, we've been lost in the mall, or we may have been lost in a strange town, but I dare say that it's only on a rare occasion that we would become so lost that we were completely removed from society and civilization and no hope of ever making the connection back. I remember when we were children, about 10, 11 years old, we got lost in the woods. And being that age, we did not have the best sense of survival, even though we'd kind of grown up in the country. And we were lost, my brother and sister and I and a friend and a couple of dogs who didn't know their way home, were lost all day long. My parents and close relatives and a lot of the neighbors were pretty much up in the air and had even had the sheriff department out looking for us. The very idea, if you've ever experienced the kind of lostness of wondering if you were ever even going to survive, that's a traumatic thing. But now consider the significance of being lost and being lost spiritually, and that for eternity. When we consider all of the burden of what the Bible holds concerning or on the subject of eternal punishment, Jesus describes it as a place where the worm dieth not, the fire is not quenched. He described it in terms such as eternal fire reserved for the devil and his angels. To be lost in hell and that forever is beyond the ability of the human mind to imagine. Suffice it to say that salvation's urgency is emphasized in the horror of the possibility of being lost. In the third place, we could say that this matter is very important because so much of Christian living is tied to this attitude of diligence, giving diligence to our salvation. One who lives to make his calling and election sure will demonstrate a great many things that go hand in hand with the principles of righteousness in the Scriptures. One who lives to make his calling and election sure will bear much fruit and so glorify the Father, John 15, verse 8. One who lives to make his calling and election sure will with his life present an unpretended true picture of pure Christianity to those around him. Matthew chapter 5, verses 13 to 16. One who lives to make his calling and election sure will normally enjoy a much happier family life at home. He will likely be a more pleasant, more productive worker in the workplace. His whole life will be affected by the very idea that he is trying to live so as to ensure his salvation. Contrast that person with the individual who is just simply trying to get by, spiritually speaking. One who has no real zeal for Christian living, but who goes from place to place and from time to time exhibiting no more initiative than just what it takes to barely meet the minimum standard, Surely an individual who lives that way will soon be known and recognized for being that way. And not only will his spiritual life have a certain taint, so to speak, to it, but the way that he lives in every aspect of his conduct will very likely reflect that same kind of attitude in his home and family life. Will be characterized by something less than true love and consideration and fervor for his family. As an employee, he's going to be one who will simply try to do the very minimum, looking forward to the time at the end of the day when he can punch out or go home. In every aspect of his life, he'll exhibit the attitude of just trying to barely make it by. Which would we rather be? Indeed, this is an urgent matter, the matter of our salvation. The second question that comes to mind as we think about this is, what can we do then to make our calling and election sure? Are there some things that we ought to be doing, some things that we ought to be looking toward in order to ensure our salvation? Setting aside for a moment the fact of the matter of obedience to the gospel of Jesus Christ, and assuming that those of us who are here this evening have obeyed the gospel and are concerned for doing the things that God would have us to do with our lives, are there some specific areas that we need to be concentrating on? Are there some specific things that we need to do in order to ensure our salvation? Number one, I would suggest that we measure. This is very important. Everything must start with a thorough examination of our present condition. It all starts here and now. If I'm concerned with living my life so that I have ensured my salvation, I'm not going to take the approach that I'll start over there tomorrow or next week. Kind of like starting a new diet, you know. I'm going to go on that new diet next week. I'm going to give myself just a few more days to really tank up. And then I'm going to really bear down. And I'm going to start that diet and I'm going to stick with it. Or, you know, I'm going to this big dinner tomorrow night and I'm going to wait until after that in order to get started on this new... You know, if we're serious about doing what Paul says in 2 Corinthians 13 verse 5... which incidentally says, examine yourselves whether you be in the faith, prove your own selves. If we're really serious about taking some measurements and checking ourselves and seeing just how we stand when we stack up against God's instruction, we'll be concerned with doing it right now. Not tomorrow, not next week, not later, but right now. In Old Testament terminology, it's rendered this way in Lamentations 3, verse 40. The prophet said, let us search and try our ways and turn again unto the Lord. And so we need to measure. Now, in all likelihood, in the second place, there may be some of us who need to clean house. I hope the graphic on the screen is not a faithful rendition of the way your spiritual life looks, but I'm certain that it does fairly represent the spiritual condition of some people. I believe that some of God's people have their spiritual house in order just about as much as that old house there in the picture that what we would call, when I was a kid, a haunted house. Doesn't look like it's been very well maintained, does it? Looks like maybe time has taken a toll on it. In fact, it looks like it has been neglected for quite some time. Is that the way your spiritual house looks? It may very well be that we need to purge out some things in order to make our lives fit for the Master's use. That's what Paul said in 2 Timothy 2, verse 21. If any man therefore purge himself from these, he shall be a vessel unto honor, sanctified and meet for the Master's use, and prepared unto every good work. Brethren, there can be no forward progress like we talked about needing so desperately this morning until we have gotten rid of all of the lingering traces of sin. If our lives are characterized, or if even a part of our lives are characterized by garbage and trash or an unmaintained spiritual lifestyle, we need to clean those old things up. We need to throw out the trash. You know, sometimes I'm afraid we approach it very much like some of us do approach cleaning the house, or in my case, cleaning my shop. I've literally worn some stuff out just moving it from one corner of the shop to the other. And I see Brother Nick Pace smiling real big. I think he can relate to this. And I know Brother Joe McCullough can, because I've been in his shop too. You know, some things are just a little too precious to throw away. You'll never use them. I mean, how in the world would you ever have a need for some of that stuff? But you know, there's just something about it. You just can't get rid of it. And so we move it from one place to the next and work around it. Live with it. Learn how to get along with that thing sitting there right in the way of everything. Is that the way our spiritual house is? Do we need a clean house? In 2 Corinthians 7, verse 1, Paul said, "Having therefore these promises, dearly beloved, let us cleanse ourselves from all filthiness of the flesh and spirit, perfecting holiness in the fear of God." John said in 1 John 3, verse 3, "Every man that hath this hope in him purifieth himself, even as he is pure." In the third place, we can make our calling and election sure by following the prescription. If you are going to the doctor, we talked about this a little bit Wednesday night in the word prescription, prescribed. We said then that worship is something that God has prescribed. It's something that He says you need to do this. He didn't say do it if you like it. He didn't say do it if it tastes good. He didn't say do it if it makes you feel good. But He said do it. And He tells us how to do it. The prescription for Christian living is here before us. And sometimes we may very desperately need to go back and make sure that we're following the prescription. In fact, Peter makes reference to something in this text in 2 Peter chapter 1, verse 10, from which our study is taken. He has just referred to that list of things that I said are qualities of Christian living. We call them the Christian graces. I don't believe that's an exhaustive list, but I do believe it contains a great many of the most important things that you and I could ever put into our lives. And in verse 8, after giving that list of things, Peter says, "For if these things be in you and abound, they make you that you shall neither be barren or unfruitful in the knowledge of our Lord Jesus Christ." He makes reference to them again in verse 10, where he says, "For if you do these things, you shall never fall." And then in verse 12, he makes reference to them again. He said, "I will always put you in remembrance of these things." Now listen to this. Those of us who get tired of hearing the same thing over and over again, because we already know that, let's move on to something that we don't know. Peter says, "I'll put you in remembrance of these things, though you know them and you are established in the present truth." Just because we've heard something from God's will before is no reason not to look at it again. These things, Peter says, are so important. What are these things? He says, yea, in verse 7, and for this very cause, adding on your part all diligence. Again, there's that word, diligence. In your faith, supply virtue. In your virtue, knowledge. In your knowledge, self-control. In your self-control, patience. In your patience, godliness. To your godliness, add brotherly kindness. And to your brotherly kindness, love. Indeed, as he said, without those things, one is nearsighted, unable to function properly. Without these things, Christianity is lacking. You want to make your calling and election sure, then follow the prescription. God's Word has prescribed for us those things that we need to be doing, the way that we need to live. Often we will have to lay aside our selfishness, our own self-righteous concerns, and so many other things that get in the way. But the bottom line is, follow the prescription.